Why don't you guys introduce yourself and tell us how Painted Fish got its start?
Okay, so hi, my name is Amber Lynn, and I'm the lead singer of Painted Fish.
Hi, my name is Tristan Willard, and I'm the lead guitarist of Painted Fish.
And I'm Mitch Ray, and I'm the bass player for Painted Fish.
And we have a drummer, too, but he's not here today. His name is Vinny DeCosmo, and he says hello.
Great. In
Italian.
I think that's hello. I don't know.
No, he says ciao, right? Ciao.
Isn't ciao bye?
I think it's
hello and goodbye.
I don't know.
No, maybe not. That's aloha.
Man, and I know I've got a lot of Italian friends. I got to ask them that. They'll probably say it's hello or something. You know, make me look stupid. But how did Painted Fish get its start? How'd you guys get together?
Well, Mitchell and I have been playing together for how long now, Mitch? Five years now. So we go way back. And then Tristan and I met. He was kind of running a music studio, a local music studio in Clearwater, Florida. And I met him because, well, they hired me to play a Halloween party last year, which was really a wild, crazy, really fun party that they threw. Yeah, that's how we met. And then Vinny, actually my brother plays too around town, and he's like, hey, I met this really great drummer. You'd love him. You know, he's really cool. I think he'd fit in well. And he knew that I've been kind of wanting to do a band project for a long time, but you know, it's one of those things you can't just force it together. It's not like you can run a Craigslist ad and find all the right players in a weekend. It doesn't really work that way. You know, you have to really click.
Match up personalities. I mean, everything. There's a lot to.
Yeah. So magic.
We actually like each other.
Well, and forming a band is hard because every time I've had one successful band, and then everything after that, when I put an ad out, it's 50 guitarists, one bass player, and a drummer that's played for 2 weeks.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, so, and you know, he's got the white bass drum, the black tom, and then the red sparkle snare.
It's three different drum sets, but
exactly, exactly.
It's not like putting together a Strat from old parts.
And he's got cymbals that where it's spelled S-Y-M-B-O-L, and so, How did you come up with this album? Because this album is I mean, it's lush sounding. I mean like the first thing I thought, if you remember my review, I talk about Edie Brickell.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not just because of the female singer aspect. You know, I mean, the band, it sounds tight and it sounds lush, because I always thought the Bohemians shined out in their own right. And I mean, the band is one cohesive unit. So how were you able to achieve that besides practice?
What we did for this album, we actually recorded it in my bedroom. So we didn't have a whole lot of time. You know, we set a deadline. We knew we wanted to have this thing out before the end of this year. And once we kind of did the Kickstarter to raise a little money so that we would have the money to print it and kind of up our gear a little bit, we realized that we were under a very strict time schedule. So we worked really hard, but honestly, we did a lot of takes, and we wanted a very natural, almost live sounding album. We knew we didn't want it to be overproduced, and we literally took like an old classic rock approach to going for the energy, like not necessarily the perfection, but just the vibe and the energy. And I think that kind of, you know, sets us apart from a lot of the really commercial music that's out there today.
Now, the whole thing was actually really recorded in your bedroom?
The drums we recorded in Nashville. So we didn't have the capability to do good drums here. So we went up to Nashville, and actually when we started recording the album, Vinny was not our drummer yet. We didn't actually
have a drummer,
but we knew that he was probably going to be our drummer because we jammed with him right before he had took off with his family to Europe. And we started recording the album while he was away. So my buddy Tim Grogan out of Nashville actually played the drums on this record, and him and I have written a lot together, and he did my last album with me, the 7 album.
Well, I'm actually stuck on bedroom. Did you like empty it and then put everybody in there?
No. My bed's over there. We could send you some pictures.
Oh my gosh.
Orlex, like acoustic foam everywhere. There's rugs. We got.
Yeah, we brought in a rug because there was some. We do have a lot of foam. We kind of built little forts. So yeah. Every time we'd record, we'd have like a 2 or 3 day block where it's like, okay, we're not allowed to do anything except Tristan and I would literally stock up on like food and beer and whiskey and water. Wow. And we'd just be like, lock the door and we're stuck in this room and we just wouldn't leave for like 3 days. No lie. And, you know, I just take after take and we messed around with stuff and we wanted to experiment and we kind of wanted to go on a little journey like back in the day, like people used to do before it was like, this is how you mic a guitar, you know, and this is how it's done. And this is the only way, you know, this mic is the mic that you should use. It's like, okay, well, we have this $200 AKG mic and that's all we got. So let's figure out how to make it sound good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, don't you think that those are some of the best sessions to have? I mean, when you know, I mean, because you're also creating memories too, because 20 years from now, you're all going to look back at that and think of it as a fun time.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and I mean, and in that respect, the album becomes a time capsule.
Yeah.
So, well, let's talk about the songs. I'm assuming Bigger Bedroom is about the recording.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, I mean, the air conditioning wasn't really.
That's amazing.
Oh my god.
While we were recording, so it would be like 95 degrees.
I forgot about that.
And we'd be just sitting here sweating, and you can't have fans on while you're recording or anything. So. Yeah. You'd be dead after that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you know, in a smaller room, I mean, like one human being, much less three, will raise the temperature of the room.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, man, and then you know, so are these songs arranged in an order that tells a story? Then,
well,
not necessarily.
We kind of put it in an order that we wanted to make the album upbeat and fun to listen to. You know, beginning to end. And so we kind of ordered the songs at the end. We're like, oh, this song would go into this one really well. And, you know, up the energy and, okay, well, let's take it down a notch with the next one. So maybe not a story this time.
Well, no, I mean, well, musically it's somewhat of a journey because I mean, that's a good point you bring. Cause when I was listening to it, I noticed that it's like, you know, there are highs and there are lows throughout it. But I mean, it's still everything from start to finish still gives you that feel good vibe. You know, like an easy going.
Did you pick up on Tristan's wine glass solo?
No.
Because that's definitely the high point of the whole album. I mean, we had to leave it.
No, which song was that in?
If you listen to Life is a Party, when we recorded space for two guitar solos.
Is that what that was? Because I mean, you're talking where you do the vinegar and you
yeah, it's like ding 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 ding.
I was wondering. I actually thought that was a synth,
a synthesizer.
Yeah, but maybe like with a MIDI, you know, maybe.
The wine glass. Yeah, it was actually my sister's idea.
Yeah, she kind of walked. She walked into the room slightly intoxicated and was banging on the wine glass, and I was like, "Hold on a second, we
need to lay down a take of that.
We need to do this."
Nice. I'm gonna have to listen to that again with that knowledge because, like I said, I thought it was, you know, like it was a MIDI pre-recorded sound.
No, that's all natural. The fit my fingernail in a wine glass.
So did you actually like drink it till it was in key and then like leave that one alone and that's A and then you did B and then like did you do the scale?
I mean,
it's just one note.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So,
it does sound higher in pitch when you flick it harder.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds reasonable.
Nice. I'm gonna have to listen to that again, man. But let's talk about some of the other stuff, the other sounds in the album, like the way it's mixed. Like I said earlier, it's got a lush tone to it. One of the things that I really keyed into was the vocals, obviously. I mean, you've got, Amber, you've got a beautiful voice. I mean, you've got a nice range and you've got a beautiful, sultry voice. That's why I compared you to Alanna Miles as well,
mm-hmm.
You know, but also, you know, if you think about it, I mean, you know, just as prominent on the stage are the bass and the guitar. Like the bass had a full thick bottom.
Oh yeah.
Which is what
a six string bass.
Well, I love it. See my brother is a funk bass player. He's one of those slap guys. You know. But one thing I really loved was the velvety tone, you know, of your plucking. I mean, it's so I've got to ask both of you in time, but you know, we'll start with the bass. I notice you're, you know, what looks like an Ibanez sound gear. obviously.
It is.
I'm the IBNS fanatic over here. So, but I gotta ask, what are you running that through?
Well, we were actually recording, and I had an MPEG amp, and it just wasn't cutting it. So we went to Guitar Center, and the three of us kind of picked the amp out, but we played through it, and it's a Gallen Krueger. I think it's the 750.
700 RPM.
Oh, nice.
So we actually wound up recutting all of the bass tracks on the whole album.
After we bought that amp.
Yeah, but
after we heard the amp, we knew that was the one for sure, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Gallen Krugers are nice, man. My my favorite bass setup is actually a Gallen Krueger 200 with Trace Elliott cabs, a 410 and a 115 with the aluminum cones.
Yeah.
That's the sound from hell right there. you know. So, Tristan, what about you, cuz I noticed you're a Strat guy. I can actually tell that was a Strat when, you know, on parts of the album because of that bell tone.
Yeah, for sure. It's just a standard Fender Stratocaster HSS. It's actually Amber's Stratocaster.
Yes.
And
nice.
We've been running it through a Fender Deluxe Reverb. But I think there's actually a couple tracks cut on a telly.
I think we did cut a couple tracks
on just a standard USA, a custom shop telly, actually.
Nice, nice. So, yeah, so you're a Fender guy, huh?
I'm a Fender guy.
Yeah, I love Fenders. I've got most of my guitars are Strats. I collect guitars. By collecting, I mean I don't sell them. I just, like, throw them in over years and years and years. So, but it sounds better when I say collect, because then it doesn't sound like I'm just hoarding. So Amber, what gear are you using since Tristan's got your Strat?
He does have my Strat. Mm. Actually, every time somebody comes up at a show and they're like, "Hey, man, nice guitar. Hey, I love your amp." I'm like, I want to be like, "It's mine," but but no, I play a Martin. I play an acoustic.
Martins are really good. Mm-hmm. You know, they're also really salty price wise, but
I actually just got a new one, and it's a Mexican made Martin, but it sounds great. But I wish I could have one of those pearly inlaid like $5,000 guitars. That'd be awesome.
We cut most acoustics on the album with, I have a Martin as well. It's a DCPA-4 Rosewood, and we cut most of the acoustic tracks on the album with that.
Now are the Martins you guys using? Because I've never even played a Martin before. You know, but I mean, I've noticed that when people say they played a Martin on this song or that song, it has a distinct bright, you know, / deep tonality to it. I mean, do you guys notice that when you're playing live?
Certainly. I mean, like in the, well, not, but especially in the recording of Happy, we played acoustic is on a lead on acoustic on that song. And it stood out a lot more than any other guitar.
So. Yeah. And I bought a Taylor a couple years back, and I actually wound up trading it in for my old Martin. But I just didn't, it was really easy to play. What I'll say about Taylors is, like, they play like butter. Like, you could just play one all day and it wouldn't bother you. But the Martin, like, by the end of a 3 or 4 hour show, man, like, or a session, your hand is like killing you. They're not easy to play.
I've heard they're kind of like playing a Les Paul for 2 hours, like neck wise.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, like I've got a Gibson Les Paul Classic, and after about 20 minutes, I got to put it down, man. Because I mean, I'll my left hand will almost start to feel like it's got carpal tunnel.
Yeah,
exactly.
It happens. It does.
Exactly. But that's why I love Fender and Ibanez. It's like my recording bass is a 4-string sound gear. I mean, and I got it because, I mean, it feels almost like a guitar, you know, like a baritone guitar or something, I guess you could say. But, you know, because the neck is thin. I mean, I couldn't play a 6. I mean, my brother's got a 6 and I sounded like crap on it, but
we picked out here, Amber and I did a show with Los Lonely Boys, and the bass player for them had a 6-string bass, and I just listened, and I loved the tone of it, and probably a week or two later, I went out and got it, but the neck is actually not as bad as you would think, because I thought the same because I've always played a four-string bass too. But it actually feels real comfortable, and it gets such a I love the bottom string. I love the B string. It's just
I love it too. It's like it's
yeah. Oh yeah, like rumbles the room. Everything. Yeah, but I mean, you know, I love it because you know, my brother plays 5 and 6 strings, but one I mean, was it hard for you, Mitchell, going from a 4? Because I'm assuming you started on a 4, right?
Actually, I've always played 4-string. I have a BC Rich Mockingbird that I've had for a long time.
That's a Thrasher bass, man.
Yeah, and I have a Fender P bass that I've had for a while there too, but. You know, it just when I picked the sound gear up, it was just the Ibanez just felt good, very good.
Now, is that a neck through or a bolt?
No, it's actually not a neck through. It's bolt, but it actually, again, like I said, the action on it is very good. It's very comfortable.
Yeah, but was it hard switching up? I mean, because it might be in my case because my brother plays Lakelands. And Lakelands are known for fat ass necks,
right?
You know, and like he, you know, his Lakeland 5-string, which is basically a Fender Jazz, you know, copy, you know,
right.
But you know, but twice the money for some reason. But I thought initially I wasn't sure.
I thought it would be. I play guitar also, so. You know, to have the C string on the high end there, it allows you to do a little bit more, and then the B on the low end allows you to do a little bit more. But again, like I started out with one that was kind of inexpensive because I wasn't sure going from 4 to 6 if it'd work out. But after, you know, 2-3 weeks, I knew for sure that's so I kind of upgraded on the bass, and that's the one that I have now, and it's the only one I ever use now.
Nice. Go ahead.
Well, there's a song, I think it's I'm Tired, where the walk down, you do the walk down on the bass, Mitch. So could you have done it like that with a 4-string? I mean,
No.
You use all 6 strings, right?
Yes.
That's
yes.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. No, he has to. You go down on the B on that.
Yes, and it's cool.
And it starts really high, too.
Yeah. See, I couldn't play it. I could, like I said, when I tried my brother's 5-string, even, and play, it felt like playing a washing board.
It is weird, man. I've tried to do it, too.
Well, we have one song on the CD called Complicated, and that's the other end of the spectrum, because, see, we do a part in there where the bass just kind of slides down there. Is that the one?
I'm tired, right?
Is it I'm Tired? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, if you're talking about, I'm Tired. Do, that bass note.
No, the part where we do the breakdown, where it's like with the percussion.
Oh, yeah, that's on I'm Tired.
Yeah.
Yeah, where there's the bongo.
Is it the one shot song?
Yeah.
That's
the walk down.
Uh-huh, that part.
But not the walk down. I'm just talking where I just slide all the way down the low.
That's complicated.
That's complicated. They're right when we break it down.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know you're talking about the do.
Yes. We just had a minor fight, but we're all good now.
Nah, man. It brings me back, man. Well, usually we were like either like telling each other they sucked at this point, or you know, so well,
it was actually a lot of fun doing it, and it was a lot of fun, tedious at times, but
especially when the air was broken. Yeah. Now that you guys reminded me,
the best work usually is, man. You know, I mean, I think the recording process needs a little tension, you know, in order to make everything sound just right.
For sure.
Not tight, but right. And I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, not every note has to be in its place. And actually, sometimes, like I love Nirvana, and they rarely hit everything on key, but they did it just right.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, so well, that begs the question, and this might start another argument. If you guys could all choose your favorite song on the album, just one, and throw the rest of it away, which would it be and why?
Okay, you guys go first.
Oh man. I like the last song on the CD.
I'm Tired.
I like where we're going on that. It's really fun to play.
You like that because you get like a bass solo.
Well, you know, anyways, I like that. I like all of them, but that's one that I really like a lot.
What's your favorite?
I'd say my favorite on the album is Evermore. I like that one. And I like the last track, I'm Tired, as well. But I'd say Evermore would have to be the one.
Okay, so Tristan and I actually had a little battle about this earlier. My favorite, and I think it's because I love recording, but you know what? I really love playing live, like, so much. And the funnest track that we do live, I get to put the guitar down. So now, you know, the band comes in and they hold it down and I get to kind of front a little bit and play a tambourine. Take Me to the Ocean, which I think we called it Gimme Love Tonight, right? So Gimme Love Tonight is my favorite track.
Why'd you guys change the name on it?
We asked at our shows, we asked people what they thought it should be called and they all said Gimme Love Tonight. I thought Take Me to the Ocean, but we thought maybe it kind of sounded like country or something.
Oh, okay.
Like, Take Me to the Ocean would sound kind of ballady. So we called it Gimme Love Tonight, because it sounds a little more rock and roll, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think either one would work, but yeah, I mean, Gimme Love Tonight, I mean, does sound, actually sounds kind of Kiss-ish, man. You could just use a, she's throwing like the BC Rich bass on that one. You know, so, well, what's a Painted Fist show like? Because I've seen some pics, but, you know, pics rarely do a show justice.
There is much drinking of the alcohol and dancing and strange scents in the air. Lots of smiling. The occasional drunken fall into the microphone. Not by us.
So
the ladies dance, you know. We got hippie chicks that come and dance. My sister actually, her name's Dita Nicole, and she did our new album cover, the one that we're going to be using digitally and going forward. And she comes out, and, you know, sometimes she brings hula hoops.
Are you serious?
Necklaces and sells. It's very social, you know, and we're really, a lot of what we do now, you know, we play kind of smaller, like, music venues, I'd say. So it gives us the opportunity to really connect with people. Like, when we go on break, we go out in the audience, and if somebody wants to do a shot, I mean, we'll probably do a shot with them.
Nice.
We get to mingle, and it's really very, very social and intimate and fun and personal, and we have so many friends, and we like bringing people together, and it's definitely a scene, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, the album's not out yet. It comes out September 5th, but we did a test drive on it a couple weeks ago. Have you gotten any feedback?
Yeah.
Nice.
Everyone liked that article a lot.
They were really excited.
Oh, I mean the songs.
That's the first that, I mean, nobody's heard the whole album other than some really close friends and family that have kind of the bootleg copy, but, you know, a lot of really good feedback. You know, people really like a lot of the same songs we picked. I'm Tired.
Yeah.
Give Me Love. Complicated. I really like Complicated a lot too, actually. That's a good one.
Nice. Cause I'm looking at the article now, and I mean, like, people are still putting comments on it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. You know?
Sure.
So I mean, like, so did the preview tracks, did they go along pretty good, like, on the whole, or, you know, does that drum up some buzz? I mean, like, did everybody like what they heard so far?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, we were able to do our Stone in San Francisco. We were able to go to San Francisco as a band, and, Amber put together a video, and you know, we've gotten good response from that also. So probably the one song in its entirety would be
Stone in San Francisco.
So that's all the general masses have heard, like, in its entirety?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean,
I guess Happy was released. I guess it wasn't in its entirety, though. We released like 2 minutes of it when we were still recording.
Well, if people come to our shows, or like every Tuesday night, we do a live show, but it's really more of a rehearsal for us. If they come to that, then they know the songs and they were really excited to hear the recordings. But yeah, really, that was the first preview that everybody kind of got. And we have some some people who follow us over in Japan and over in the UK, and they were so excited to hear it because we didn't post anything. You know, you're the first person to post those clips.
Oh, nice, nice. Well, I'm honored. I was really pleased to hear this stuff too, because I mean, it's a really, you've got a really refreshing sound to you guys.
You
know, I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I sometimes I use these words that are kind of stupid, but I mean, it was refreshing, like for me, you know, because like number one, I'm kind of like the porn director that's been doing it for 20 years. You know, it's like yeah, okay, go ahead and do that too and stuff. But then when I get something like this, it's like wow. You know, they did something I never heard before, you know, or haven't heard.
Awesome.
That's what we're going for.
We were so excited because you don't know when you're recording it. You're like, well, we like it and we're excited about it, but you never know what other people are going to think, you know? And there was a little bit of this insecurity, like, okay, well, we engineered this thing ourselves and recorded it in the bedroom. And then even when we sent it to, we had it professionally mixed up in Nashville. And even then we were kind of nervous. And I'm asking the guy, I'm like, do you think it's good enough? Like, does it sound professional enough? And he's like, it sounds like a real band made a real record, you know? And I was like, okay, cool. Well, that's a good compliment. You know, that's what we want to be. We want to be, you know, respected as like a real band who really is in this for the art of making the music and the love of it. You know, we're not trying to make it super like polished, you know, we just want it to be energetic and have the right vibe and everything.
Yeah. So now how are you guys planning to promote it? Cause September 5th is coming up real quick.
Yeah. Well, we've reached out to the bloggers, you know, and we are talking about doing a AAA and kind of community and college radio promotion. So we're trying to figure out how to really make that happen in the best way. And then we are working with some people, can't really say any names, but we are kind of moving towards playing some bigger shows next year. And we have our fingers crossed, you know, nothing's ever set in stone until it's kind of happening. So.
Oh, yeah, I know all about that.
High hopes, and, you know, we're working really hard. We're planning on, you know, kind of starting to record our follow-up album later this year. So over the holidays, we want to start recording another record.
Now, are you guys, like, repped by anybody at this point? Or are you guys, like, shopping around the album around for a record deal? Or
I don't know that we're necessarily shopping for a record deal. I mean, we wouldn't say, I wouldn't run away from one, especially a good one. But we're kind of just an indie band, and yeah, we kind of do everything ourselves, and it's all word of mouth and kind of using the social media and trying to work with other people that are excited to be on the indie side of the business, because I really do feel like that's the direction the industry is going in anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that leads up to a stock question that I ask everybody or all the indie artists. If Virgin or Atlantic or CBS or Columbia or Capitol came up to you and offered you the standard first record deal, would you take it?
I would really want some guarantees from a label. Like, I've just heard way too many horror stories of bands that record these great records and then they get shelved and the label never puts them on a good tour like they said they would, or never releases the album like they said they would. And I would just... it would drive me nuts. I mean, I would have to just keep doing my thing and put out music anyway, and I'd probably get sued every other week because I wouldn't be able to like handle somebody telling me what I could and couldn't do with my career.
Well, so, I mean, think about it. I mean, standard, like they're like booking hair appointments at the salon for people, you know, stuff like that, and picking your clothes out, you know.
You know, I mean, I got kicked out of high school because I couldn't follow the rules. Like, it's just maybe not in our band's blood to operate that way. We're a bunch of painted fish. We really are quite the diverse group of people, you know, but good people. We're law-abiding citizens, mostly. Yeah. But, you know, just that's a tough one. It's hard to say. I would consider it for sure. I would I wouldn't not read that contract. I wouldn't not hire a lawyer.
It might. Yeah, you would definitely need a lawyer. You know, yeah. Like, I mean, I would have like one that the whole band could trust too, because
exactly, yeah.
Because I've heard stories too where the label's like, oh, well, we want him really bad, and they just got a lawyer. Oh, well, who is it? Oh, it's so and so. I know him. you see where that's going?
Yeah.
you know.
And then there's another side to this too, where, you know, people have already kind of said, and even last year we were talking to one of the, we can't say the name of it because we had to sign an NDA, but we were talking to one of like the big kind of talent shows that are popular on TV these days. And they always kind of want to pull the lead singer away from the band. And I started as a solo artist and a singer-songwriter and spent, you know, basically the past decade of my life looking for the right band and the right family and the right sound where everybody agreed and all the energies kind of came together in a good way, and finally found it. And, you know, we really want to hold on to that. We want to be a band. We don't want anybody to try to change that or anything either. And even already a lot of people have kind of mentioned things like, oh, well, you know, you're the lead singer, you write the songs. And it's like, no, but I don't write the same songs by myself that I do with the band, and it's way more fun, and it's no fun to go on the road alone. And so there's kind of that fear too. And That wouldn't be cool.
I could kind of see where people would think that with Painted Fish, because you had, you know, when I did my research, I found out you did have your, you know, you have a solo career on your own, you know, and everything. And then plus, I think that, and this might be, I think, a little dated for some people, including myself, but I know people that think this, when they see a band with three guys and one girl, the girl's kind of separate. You know, they kind of look at her as like, okay, especially if it's the singer, then it's like, okay, she's out front. And then it's, you know, three guys, like No Doubt, you know, something like that, you know.
But that's not what we want. And that's not the direction that we're going. Like, we really want our next record, I'm going to say the Eagles and Fleetwood Mac, just because of the heaviness on the vocals. You know, everybody in those bands sings.
Yeah.
We really want to go that direction with the next album.
Yeah, and everybody was cool as shit in Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
You know, I think they all slept together, but I mean, other than that, I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, I think wasn't like, okay, when it was Lindsay and Stevie, then Stevie and Fleetwood and Fleetwood and Fleetwood and Mac and Fleetwood and, you know, but maybe that's what it took for them to get where they were. You know, more power to them, man, you know. That's more material. you mentioned reality shows and stuff earlier. What is your opinions? You know, I want each of your opinions on this. How bands or how shows like that have affected the label and music industry?
They're so, having now actually gone through the process a little bit, I mean, we kind of just made it to the celebrity judge point and then got cut. But
oh, that's where you just go, oh, fuck, like, you guys, bulky. Leave.
You know, they tell you like what to say, and I don't know. It's,
oh yeah,
almost, it's not necessarily scripted, it's, as much as like, okay, so for this, me, they wanted me to act like I had never done anything on my, you know, they wanted me to say, oh yeah, I'm like this local hometown girl and I play on the beach. And I'm like, okay, look, that's not the case at all, because I book my own tours. I've been to and from California every single year for like years in a row now. And I'm not this little hometown girl that's never.
They wanted everybody to be their stereotypes is basically what it was.
Yes. Yeah. And they want you to win over the audience, like with a backstory. So Tristan and I, you know, we were dating, and so they really wanted to kind of use that and say, like, almost like a love story aspect, which is kind of lame and cheesy, yeah. You know?
Kind of Fleetwood Mac-ish.
Yeah. Well,
it's one thing if it's there and it's the real deal, but it's another if you're exploiting it for, like, commercial television. It's just really,
like,
weird.
Were they going to have, like, a whole arc where, okay, now you guys are in turmoil and...
That's probably what they were thinking.
I'm sure that would have happened, yeah.
I think once we got there, they were like, this isn't going to work.
You know, like, seriously, you know what's funny? We had another celebrity from another show called Rockstar Supernova. A girl named Dylana from South Africa. She was the second place for Rockstar Supernova.
Cool.
So, and they did the same shit to her. They had, they told her, like, okay, well, what's going to happen? It's going to, we're going to wake you up at 4 a.m. We want you to go to, we want you and this other guy to go skinny dipping. And she's like, what the, you know, like, she actually, she was going, I think she said she was going to win it. And then, like, they just didn't like the way she was cooperating with the off the backstage stuff at the hotel and, you know, the backstory and all that stuff. And she was just kind of like, screw this.
So I'm so, like, against it because it's really just phony, you know, and it's just everything that I feel like hurts the art of the music is that.
Well, I mean, it just, I mean, like, why call it reality then?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean.
Not at all.
But they don't even call it reality TV. They call it like a, they make it seem like they're making people's dreams come true. I don't know what you call that.
There's an actual term for it, actually. It's called scripted reality, but that's like military intelligence. It's like an oxymoron.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, but so would you say that, like, I mean, because I, you know, me personally, I think that they're all like that, even American Idol and The Voice and all that other stuff. I mean, they want a rags to riches story.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, I mean, their dream is like, you know, like Simon Cowell's wet dream is, you know, a terminally ill person with AIDS and stuff that can sing like a tenor.
Exactly. Yeah, and that would be ideal.
Exactly. I mean,
that would be the audience. Yes.
Yeah. But do you think that that's kind of cheapening, like, the music industry as a whole? Because I think the music.
Yeah, absolutely. It's ridiculous, you know?
Well, because I think. Oh, go ahead.
That's what I like about people like you, you know, and the internet is so cool now for musicians because we can do our thing and it doesn't cost a lot of money and we can do it in the real way that we want to. And that is what's so cool about being an indie artist these days. I mean, it's also very hard and it is sometimes difficult to make money, but I don't know, in the big scheme of life, it's probably the better piece of cake.
You have more freedom, I think, though.
Yeah.
You know, and think about this, like, there's so much stuff available here, like, you know, like I told you earlier, we're starting our own J Gear store, and there's iTunes, Google, you know, Spotify, that you at 3 a.m. can finish a song and then you guys all upload it yourself.
Yeah.
And then set your price point.
Exactly. That's awesome.
And it's really, I mean, imagine if like Fleetwood Mac, imagine if Led Zeppelin had the technology that we had back then, I think that they would probably have been indie bands. Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys weren't, maybe down the line they had great producers come in to work with them, but really, like, their early stuff was very experimental, and they were just a rock band just like us, just like recording in a house somewhere or,
right,
you know, in a room that they called a recording studio, but really it was like a tape player in a big room.
Exactly. And the dreams changed anyway. Like when I was 15, the dream was, I want to be on MTV. Nobody even says that anymore.
No,
they might say, God forbid, though, when they say MTV now, it's like, I want to be on 16 and Pregnant.
Yeah. You
know? There's only one more thing I got to do. So, you know, but I mean, you don't see, MTV doesn't play videos anymore. VH1 doesn't play videos anymore. You know, what you get now is you get maybe like Palladium or you know, something like that that'll play live concerts in between 50,000 Budweiser commercials.
Exactly.
You know, it's all neutralized. I mean, so YouTube, if you think about it, YouTube is the new MTV.
It basically is.
It is. And, you know, it's also the way things are these days. It is very lending to the local artists. Like, if you are a social person, you know, if you don't go around acting like a diva, if you're cool and you mingle with people and you have a good time, those people are going to support your band and they're going to come to your show, even if it's twice a month, they'll keep coming because they love the social aspect of it and it's real and they love that about it. You know, it's so we feel like we belong a few places, like New Jersey, we have a home there, and then We have a home here in Tampa Bay, and then we also have a home in Northern California, and we have so many amazing friends who, like, take us in. They'll let us stay at their houses. They cook us dinner. Like, they're so good to us, and it's really incredible, you know, and really cool. Like, it's really – I feel like it's living for real, you know. It's really, like, getting out there and getting your hands dirty in the world in a good way.
Now – if you could choose one or the other and stick with it, would you stay on the road or would you stay in the studio?
Oh, man.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
That's a very hard one.
That is really tough.
I would think you'd want to do both, though. I mean, you'd want to
That wasn't an option.
Yeah, but you want to create your music, but you want it to be heard.
And, you could do all live albums.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because a lot of things that you hear recorded now, it's not the actual, you know, it's not what you get live. And I think what we do, everything is we play all the instruments. I mean, it's...
I feel like being on the road is far less stressful
certainly.
Than being in the studio. So I'm going to have to go with on the road just because I love the people that we come in contact with and I love the excitement and I love the, you know, you don't have to do things like clean your room because you just get to like load up the car and throw out the dirty cups and then like start over again and it's a new city all the time and new faces and it's fun and even when you're tired, you know, it's just like, oh man, it's almost like a mission. I feel like we're like a troop, like a military troop going into battle when we go out on the road because there's so much coordination involved. I mean, moving people and gear. We just played out in San Diego over the weekend. We just did a little corporate gig out there. But getting our gear to San Diego on an airplane was absolutely ridiculous.
It was crazy. For sure.
Oh, if you put handles on, it's all carry-on, man.
Yeah.
But just stuff like that is really, really fun and exciting and ever-changing.
So you even like the hotels? Because I hate hotels. I hate motels and I hate hotels.
Depends on the hotel.
Yeah, because I got a bed bug story that would like freak you guys out, man. I'm just saying.
I'm already freaked out.
So. The first time, Tristan, I was like, hey, will you come play this show? This is before we formed the band, you know? I was like, hey, will you come do a duo gig with me out of town? And we stop at, like, I don't know, maybe a Motel 8 or something, and we go in the room, and he, like, freaks out. He's like, I'm not sleeping here. And I'm like, bro, are you kidding me?
There was, like, I lift up the sheets, and there's just a giant stain, and I was like, oh,
like, we'll sleep on top of the covers. Like, get over it, you know? And
Oh, yeah, motel, anything that ends in 6 or 8 is dead to
me. Anything with a number you need to veer away from, for sure.
Yeah, because that could mean 8 bodies in the, you know, 8 murders or whatever, man, or 8 pounds of coke under the desk or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I had a similar story, but when I lifted the mattress, like serious, you remember that scene in Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull where the ants came out of nowhere?
Yeah,
that was all bed bugs and they were all looking right at me.
Yeah,
that is disgusting. Yeah.
I would probably run and leave everything behind.
I've never seen a bed bug.
Yeah. Oh, you don't want it. They're like these little black beetle looking things, and they actually think. So,
ew.
Yeah, it's bad. My friend was like, well, just scoop some of them up and show the manager. I'm like he's in a care. They probably know him.
Yeah.
You know, so they probably freaking work here, man. But what does Painted Fish have coming up? I mean, like, what are the next 6 months? I mean, I know we talked about the promotional aspects, but do you have a tour getting, like, in the works and everything? Or?
Well, Tristan and I are going to be doing a little kind of duo thing representing the band up in Jersey and New York City in October. And that's just because we got an opportunity to open for somebody really awesome, but they were doing an acoustic set. So the club promoter did not want a full band, you know, kind of going on before an acoustic headliner. And then, you know, we really want to see this album through. We're going to shoot a few more music videos before this year is up. I think the next one we're going to do is going to be Gimme Love Tonight. And Mitchell has like this really sweet Mercedes. What is it, a 1972?
Oh, is it the old diesels?
No, it's actually gas. They are a regular regular gas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's
straight pimping.
Nice.
Red convertible.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
wow.
We're gonna like use that in the video.
Nice. You gotta let us premiere those for you, man. Please, please, please.
Okay.
Definitely. I'll promote the shit out of it.
Let's do it.
So definitely, man. What were you gonna say, Amber?
We kind of have a tentative title already and a direction for the theme of our next album, and we're really excited now that we've released this first album. We really want to do our second one. You know, obviously we want Vinny to play all the drums on the next record, and we really want to add even more of the instrumental aspect in, you know, more harmonies, and we want more breakdowns. I've always been a big Offspring fan, and I know they're kind of hit or miss with a lot of people, but they're like one of my favorite bands of all time. And my favorite thing that they do in every song pretty much is that breakdown where the bass drops and it's like, you know, and the tempo shifts. They're not the tempo, but like the groove shifts, you know, and it's like, yes. And I love that. So we want more of that, and definitely more of Mitchell's kind of funky bass lines in more of the songs. So we're going to dive a little more into this next record musically, and we're going to kind of take more time on it.